afternoon, everybody, and thank you for supporting Public Radio. I'm Tom Lounges. This is Lakeshore at 89.1 FM or streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. So wherever you may be listening, well, it doesn't matter because everywhere in the world today is Buddy Holly's birthday. September 7th, 1936, Buddy Holly came rocking into this world and in the course of less than 2 years impacted the music that we call rock and roll. Today, we are paying tribute to the late, great Buddy Holly. You see, today is the day that Kenny James and Ray Vaughan will be performing in downtown Hobart, Indiana. We've got the birthday celebration part one tonight at 7:30 with very special guests, the Spaniels Forever. Tomorrow, the show moves to Michigan, just across the state line, with Buddy Celebration number two at the Acorn Theater. Now, Kenny James and Ray Vaughan played there at Christmas time and did so well and had such a good time that we have brought them back to the Acorn. And this time, they're making their debut here at the Art Theater. And again, that is tonight with the Spaniels at 7:30 and then tomorrow at the Acorn at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And we've got Kenny James joining us shortly in the studio. We have Danny Mendel, the drummer of Ray Vaughan, with us here in the studio. And I think we should start off, as we often do, by let the music do the talking. This is the original deal. This is Buddy and the Crickets, because that'll be the day. And today is the day.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, you give me all your loving and your dirt loving, all your hugs and kisses and your money too. Well, you know you love me, baby, still you tell me maybe that someday will I'll be through. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, when Cupid shot his dart, he shot it at your heart. So if we ever part, then I leave you. You sit and hold me and you tell me boldly that someday, well, I'll be through. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're gonna leave, you know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die. Well, that'll be the day. Ooh, ooh, that'll be the day. Ooh, ooh, that'll be the day. Ooh, ooh, that'll be the day.
That'll be the day. And today is the day. That's right. Today is the day. Born on this day, 1936, Buddy Holly would have been 82 years old. Now, keep in mind that we lost him at age 22, making this the 60th anniversary that we haven't had Buddy. And the impact that this guy has had on music, on artists that have followed in his wake are tremendous. And we've got a very special guest, a couple of guests today, actually. But we've got Kenny James coming in to join us. And he has been portraying Buddy Holly for a lot of years. He's got to work with different people that knew Buddy. And we're going to talk about the impact. Of course, that song, That'll Be the Day, is one that went to, I believe, maybe Danny, where you were there last night. Am I correct in saying that was his only number one, Buddy Holly's only number one?
That'll I believe be that's day? What Kenny said, yes.
I think that's what he said. We were talking with Kenny last night over at the Record Bin, and I was stunned. I mean, Buddy's got so many hits that to know he only had number one once.
Yeah.
And it was by default. It was kind of by mistake.
Yeah, and then also the format of rock and roll bands, two guitars, the bass, and the drums, and mm-hmm. let's do this. And just the way it all started way back then. Who knew what could happen if he was still been alive?
Right, right. And you know, we hear a lot about the old formats of rock and roll. Before there was a lead guitar, saxophone was a big instrument, piano with the Fats Domino type boogie woogie situation. But Chuck Berry probably introduced rock guitar to rock and roll. Buddy Holly brought in the fact that an artist could write his own music, arrange his own music, and produce his own music. And let's talk about drums a little bit as the early days. Now, I was good friends with DJ Fontana, who was the Tennessee Thunder, the man who put the beat behind the King of Rock and Roll. Buddy, let's talk about Buddy's drummer, because he was there as and just as influential in many ways.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with that new style, playing drums more than in coming out a little bit more with the drums instead of just keeping a rhythm in the background, you know, forcing out some different kind of beats, rocking it on, you know, bringing it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was a good start for drummers and that genre coming out, making drummer a little more important than just the timekeeper, I think.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, too, about the early days of rock, with Elvis and with Buddy, they both kind of had country roots. They were country artists, primarily, that you put a rock beat behind, and it became rock and roll. What are your thoughts on the evolution that we've seen in the early days versus now as far as drummers? We've got all the Carl Palmers and people like that out there playing all these over-the-top beats, and electronic drums came in and all that. Now, what's to say? And look who's here. It's Kenny James, arriving late and stylish.
Fashionably?
Fashionably, yes. We were just talking about the drums of the early days, with like DJ Fontana, and how the drums have changed in rock and roll. And I was asking Danny about the evolution of drums in rock and roll. So let's finish that topic, and then we'll talk a little more with Kenny here on some things.
Yeah, as drums come, and of course Louis Belson was probably one of the first guys with the double bass.
Right.
He started a double bass drum, and of course as time and technology goes, you went from having, a lot of guys still use two bass drums, but you can use one bass drum with the double pedals.
The cheater pedals, as we call them.
But then, like you said, and then the as rock and roll progressed, and then it's like, all of a sudden, you went from a bass tom and a floor tom and a couple cymbals to, I bet I could put 25 drums up here and let's beat every one of them during the song.
That's a little overkill, though. Really,
sometimes it is. It just but then you get to Elton John. He's got a drummer, two drummers, a percussionist.
Right.
That's a big part of his band. If you listen to his music, it's the drums and the percussion, and it's just the How it has transpired, you know, from going to that, and then now you get into heavy metal, where this is me being an old school drummer, from playing them to beating them, because a lot of guys do busting their cymbals and all that, and that's supposed to be cool. I don't know how that's cool, because the cymbals are $200-$300 a piece.
Right,
but
right.
Anyway.
Now, how long have you been drumming?
I've been drumming, I was 4 years old when I started. I'm 59, so quite a long time.
All right. How long with Kenny and Ray Vaughn?
We're going on 2 years now.
Now, you are from Pigeon Forge as well, correct?
Yeah, I've lived in that area for about 10 years. But
All right.
That's where I met Kenny.
That is a hub of entertainment. A lot of people don't realize how much it's grown. I mean, we think of Branson, we think of Vegas, and I was in Branson not too long ago, and Branson kind of disappointed me. It seems like that's kind of petering out a little bit. Pigeon Forge seems to be the new place. Is that a correct assumption?
Oh, yeah, there's musicians there. I mean, like, I play in church, and I played in a couple different churches there, and a lot of times, I mean, there's guys that come in off the road, and they're a church band. You're like, that's a church band? Well, all these guys just came in. They left Nashville, and here they are. They're home for the weekend, and you're going to play in your church, and it's like, wow.
Pigeon Forge is one of the top three or four family vacation destinations in the country. So, yeah. it has grown.
It was known for Dollywood.
Right.
And now it's become its
Dolly
own
put it on the map.
Thing.
Yep. And when I first started there, there was probably six or seven theaters, shows. And now it's, how many do you think there's?
Oh, there's quite a few. And we get over 10 million visitors a year in that section of the country there.
It's amazing. And, you know, it, like Branson, if you we're in Branson, that during season, you cannot drive down the strip and get anywhere fast. You know, it's,
right. Kind of like Hobart, Indiana today. I was driving. That's what got me here a little bit late, catching all the traffic. But, yeah, Branson has grown now. Kenny, you went down to Branson. It's I know you've shared the story before, but for those that are listening for the first time, you started out doing a single date or a single weekend in Branson, and that was a while back. Tell us that story.
Well, that was Pigeon Forge.
Pigeon Forge.
Right.
I'm sorry, Pigeon Forge.
I did do Branson. I was with Legends in Concert, but Pigeon Forge, I was living in Portland, Oregon at the time. I had a guitar shop, and I was having a good time and playing in that area and, you know, on the West Coast.
Were you doing Buddy then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. That's where I met Buddy Knox. He was living in Vancouver, Washington at that time.
Okay. And that is the guy that gave us the hit Party Doll.
Exactly. And I was at a studio with a guy named Jerry Merritt. I was recording some songs with him, and he played guitar for Gene Vincent from 1959 until Gene's passing. And Buddy was staying at his house. He called me one day and said, "Hey, would you like to meet Buddy Knox?" I said, "That'd be very cool. I heard he's up in Canada." He goes, "No, he's at my house." I said, "I'll be there in 20 minutes." So I got to meet him, and it was just so cool because he recorded in Clovis at Norman Petty Studios along with Buddy. In fact, I think he had the distinction of having the first rock and roll hit that he wrote and recorded. Buddy has the distinction of being writing in all of his material, recording and producing of his material mm-hmm. with his own.
But
his
Buddy own Knox band. Wrote his was the first to wrote his own song.
Right. That's kind of how it goes. I'm not. Okay. You know, I'm not sure if I'm
the story of two buddies.
Yeah. In fact, when Buddy did "That'll Be the Day," Norman was trying to talk him into letting Buddy Knox have it because he had already had the hit with Party Doll.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "He's already on the charts. Let's get him this song." And like they do in studios and or record companies and stuff like that. And Buddy's like, just like he always was, "No, my songs, my stuff,
my way. Yeah,
exactly.
Good stuff there. Now, if you just tuned in, this is Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Thank you for being here. And today is Buddy Holly's birthday, or would have been his 82nd birthday, had we not lost him at the age of 22 in a cornfield in Iowa. Tragic plane crash that Don McLean, of course, immortalized as the day the music died. And along with that, Big Bopper, J.P. Richardson, and, of course, Richie Valens. Mm-hmm. Now, Kenny, you have had the distinction of doing the Buddy Holly show with Big Bopper's son. He recently passed away, but you were able to perform with him. What did you take away from working with him?
Working with him was a blast. He was a great guy.
He looked like his dad.
Immensely. Scary. Immensely. Yeah. It was scary. First time I had met him, actually, and we've known of each other for a few years. I was in Nashville for a funeral for Merle Kilgore, who wrote Ring of Fire for Johnny Cash, June mm-hmm. Carter, and he wrote that. And he was Hank Williams Jr.'s manager. And I was at that funeral, and at the visitation the night before, I seen from across the room, I seen Jay, or Bopper, I always called him. And I walked up and I says, "You JP?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "I'm Kenny James." And he just hugged me. He said, "Man, how you doing? It's nice to meet you. Sorry we met this way." And
right.
We just had a good time.
He wore that leopard jacket all the time, that lounge jacket.
Yeah, which was his dad's.
Was it really?
Yeah.
He never told me that. I had a chance to do a couple shows with him. And very cordial, jovial kind of guy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see what you get, mm-hmm. you know, you get what you see type thing. And he's just a good old boy, a good Christian guy. That's, you know, he didn't waver from, you know, getting into too much stuff. He just, man, he's just a really cool guy. But he told me things about his dad that people didn't know. Like he virtually invented music videos.
Mm-hmm.
And he had plans. Bopper carried around his dad's briefcase, and he showed me these handwritten plans from his dad that he said, "You can, you know, make a camera, and then you make this tape, and you put it in this thing, and you play it." It was like a schematic to a VCR back in the 50s. And the little portable jukeboxes that sat on the individual tables.
Right.
He had a plan to put a TV screen in it so it showed pictures of the artists as they're playing. I mean, just
that's way ahead of its time.
Yeah, I mean, he was always thinking, and he was a promoter. He was the reason
and a radio DJ,
right?
Which is what his first thing was,
right? Right. And when he was DJing in Texas, he booked shows in Texas, which brought Elvis and Johnny Cash and them to Lubbock.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that booked that.
Wow.
And the first time they came, Buddy Holly wanted to play on it and couldn't. But the second time they came through, Buddy Holly actually got to open the show. So there, he kind of got to open for Elvis at one point, you know.
That's pretty cool. Now, one of the things that that I remember Bopper Jr. talking about, and he was upset because obviously Buddy got his movie and Richie Valens got his movie, and nobody ever did. His dad was always a footnote in those movies, and his goal was to get a movie made about his father, J.P. Richardson, the Big Bopper, and I'm sure it would have included all that behind the scenes kind of things we didn't know about him. What is the status? I'm sure he probably mentioned it to you. Do you know if that's ever going to be made?
Yeah, he called me one day really, really excited that Kelsey Grammer's production company had picked up the idea. And
I could see Kelsey playing him.
I don't know if it was just his production company or if he was involved in it or whatever, but he was so excited about it. And then, of course, he had gotten sick and everything, and we lost him. And it's not that it's got pushed under the rug. I know his son-in-law, JP's son-in-law, is still working hard
to get
keeping the name going and keeping the recognition and everything going. And they are working still. I don't know the status of it, but I know
it would be nice to see that happen.
It would. I mean, because out of the three, now, you know, I love Buddy Holly. He was a genius.
Mm-hmm.
Bopper was out there, man. He, you know, he had. I would love to see his life story.
Yeah, I would too. Hopefully, Kelsey, if you're out there listening to NPR today, please push that forward. We'd all like to see that. If you just tuned in, this is 89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio, NPR, and we are talking about Buddy Holly and various things connected to Buddy's life, like Big Bopper and Richie Valens and Kenny James and Ray Vaughn. They're connected as well because they're performing tonight, Buddy Holly's 82nd birthday celebration at the Art Theater at 230 Main Street in downtown Hobart, and it's going to be a really cool show. Starts at 7:30 with very special guest, the Spaniels Forever. And what do you got planned for tonight? Now, tomorrow you'll be at the Acorn. The Spaniels won't be on that date. So this is the one time, I think the first time you've played with them. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I think last year we were doing a festival and it got rained out.
That's right. They opened and then.
Yeah, and I didn't get to see them. But
yeah, they played one song and got rained out. And then you came on late because the rain stayed. Yeah. But you wound up doing your set.
Actually, you told me, hey, Kenny, don't worry about it. We'll call it a day. I said, no, when it clears, we're going to play. That's what we're here
that's
for.
Right.
So it took us a while, but we did it anyway.
We got wet.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
So actually, this is the first show. Thank God it's indoors because it is raining again. You bring the rain with you when you come.
I guess so.
But so tonight you'll actually get to fulfill that. And you mentioned off air yesterday when we were talking that you're a big fan of the Spaniels and the doo-wop
stuff. The doo-wop stuff. I love all the doo-wop. And I've got to meet a lot of different acts doing what I do, the Coasters, the Drifters, the Marvelettes. Remember, oh man, they were great.
Please, Mr. Postman.
Yeah, Chubby Checker. I mean, all these guys.
Spaniels just did a show with Chubby not long ago.
Oh,
you'll have to
right?
ask Billy about that. Yeah.
He's a great guy, and I'm just looking forward to tonight because I'm gonna be like a geek fan and be like, Spaniels, this is gonna be great.
Well, Billy Shelton has been on this show a number of times. He's 84 years old. He's the bass man. He's the last man standing, as he says, from the original early days. He and Pookie Hudson used to sing in the bathrooms and hallways of the school. And he has been in and out of the Spaniels a number of times over the years, did his own side projects. But this lineup is pretty intense. And they're actually, I got a call from Patrick, who is the main lead singer, and he was telling me they're bringing drums tonight. So it's going to be guitar, drums, and voices. So I'm kind of curious. I've never seen this ensemble version of the Spaniels. I think it's going to be pretty
excited,
cool.
I'm excited, but they, I mean, that's all well and good, but after they hear Dan play, I don't want to hear them say, we're going to take your drummer.
There you go.
Dan is the best drummer we've had in our lineup ever. As long as Ray Vaughn's been together.
Right,
I'm not taking anything away from the other guys that have been in the group over the years, but Dan is the key. He's what we've needed all along.
And he's been with you 2 years and not going anywhere.
Right. Now I got another name for you. We're talking about old groups. Speaking of groups, and it's a little later than the Spaniels, but the Temptations.
Oh yeah.
Another guy from this area is Nate Evans. He's from Gary. They have their show going on in Pigeon Forge now too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go down to Pigeon Forge and you want to hear some great Temptation stuff, you can't beat it. The guys that are in that group along with Nate were handpicked by Eddie Kendrick.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, great show, great people. And
we just lost Dennis Edwards a year ago. I mean, like all the original guys are now gone.
Yeah, I thought it, when that happened, I thought, man, I tried to get a hold of Nate and looking him up, but I didn't want to be – I don't know him that well. I'm not his best buddy or anything, so I just kind of
– You're everybody's buddy.
Well, I'm everybody's buddy, yeah.
He's got a song about that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
it's great. The Spaniels will probably do a Temptation song or two tonight because in addition to doing their doo-wop stuff that they did, like Baby It's You and Goodnight Sweetheart, they do a tribute and Temptations music, Coasters music, that's all involved in their live show. So it's going to be fun. If you've never seen the Spaniels Forever, don't be fashionably late. Show up on time. Doors open at 6 and the show starts at 7:30. It's connected to Three Monkeys. You can get food. You can get libations. It's a family show. There's an area for all of the different things involved. And we're going to have a really good time. As Coco Taylor would say, we're going to have a wang-dang-doodle.
Yeah.
And one good thing about doing stuff, even though Buddy is long gone 60 years, his music will not fade away. And on that note, let's play it. Fade away. He hasn't. Buddy Holly has not faded away in any way, shape, or form. His music is still impacting people. Just for those that are listening that are music fans, just think of the early impact he had on some of the big names in rock and roll, the British Invasion days. Everybody from the British Invasion days embraced Gene Vincent, Eddie Cochran, Buddy Holly, in addition to all the blues guys. We always talk about the blues impact, the Chicago Chess impact on England, but the rockabilly guys, the early rock pioneers, were a big influence as well. Chuck Berry, of course, on Keith Richard. The Beatles took their name in tribute to the Crickets, which was Buddy's band. They figured, well, there's already a Crickets. Why not be a Beatles? So they became the Silver Beatles and, of course, evolved into the Beatles, and the rest is history. And Graham Nash once said that they were all huge fans of Buddy Holly. he and Alan Clark and all the other guys in the group. So they just pluralized it, said if it worked for him, it'll work for us. We'll just be the Hollies, and spelled it I-E-S. Now, as far as name spelling, here's another little trivia nugget. I'll let Kenny tell you about that. Buddy Holly is spelled H-O-L-L-Y. Anyone who's got a record knows that. But that's not really how he spelled it, is it?
No, his family name is Holly. It's H-O-L-L-E-Y. And if you ever go to Lubbock, which I've been many times, you can go to the cemetery, and on his stone it says Holly, H-O-L-L-E-Y, but right below it, it says Buddy Holly. So, and he went that way because they released the song That'll Be Today. It was a demo that was sent out, excuse me, by Norman Petty, and Decca Records picked it up. And they thought it was a done deal. They liked it. They thought, oh, this is another great black group. They sound so good.
Mm.
And they pressed it and released it, and they didn't know that they didn't have a contract. Somewhere down the line, they messed up, and it was good for Buddy Holly. And at that time, they had put it out as Buddy Holly, H-O-L-L-Y. Of course, it was the Crickets and Buddy Holly.
Right.
And he just kept it that way because he liked it.
Wow. And the family still spells it with an E, though, right?
Yes.
And did you ever get to meet any of Buddy's immediate family? Did you ever meet his widow or sisters? Or?
No. His sister I had met at one time, Sherry, and I talked to Randy, his nephew, every once in a while online. His dad is Larry. He was in poor health there for a while, and I just catch up with him every now and then. And I've talked to Sonny Curtis, close enough to family, you know, that Sonny Curtis was a writer of a lot of the stuff with Buddy, and also picked up with
and
the
a cricket.
Crickets. Yeah, he was in a cricket. After Buddy was gone, he came in and played guitar as they still toured and did things with other artists and stuff.
Did he take the lead on that then as far as vocalizing?
Pretty much,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I knew he was a good singer.
A great singer and great songwriter. And I think I told you this last night, he wrote the theme to Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah, that kind of blew my mind.
Make it after all.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Now, we just lost him recently.
Two years? Joe Malden
okay.
Was the bass player. Passed away a couple
years ago. That's who I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. And Tommy Alsip also.
Tommy Alsip, who was the guitar player on the last tour that did the famous coin toss with Richie Valens. And I didn't know it. When I was in Branson, I lived half a block from him.
But you never met him?
I didn't know. I didn't know he lived there because I lived there where a lot of the stars lived in this complex that they had us in.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy Williams lived there as well.
Wow.
And I was there when he passed away. I just didn't know it. And then I moved from that area and went north a little bit to Springfield, Missouri, not Illinois. Was just right up the road from Branson to get out of that congestion. And then I find out that one of Elvis Presley's guitar players passed away, John Wilkinson. Found out he lived right behind me.
Wow, that was from the Vegas years.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. He's second guitar to James Burton. Of course, you can't call him second guitar because the guy was incredible. But,
right.
You know, on their bill, he was second guitarist.
Wow. Now, you also, speaking of Elvis, have a connection to Elvis's band through the guy that was so known for giving the scarves out.
Yeah, the man that gave him scarves and water.
Yeah,
that's what he's known for. But he did a lot more. Mr. Charlie Hodge,
rhythm guitar player, right?
He was a rhythm guitar player. He's if you can spot him, I watch all the old Elvis movies just to spot Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there he is. And
I used to do that with DJ. I'd watch the old early stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Say, there he is. There he is.
Yeah.
Of course, sometimes they were playing, but like on G.I. Blues, you could see him hanging out there, just like in the background.
Now, and unfortunately, we lost DJ.
DJ this year. Yeah. They're all going, man. We're all getting old, and they're getting older.
Yeah, it's sad. It really is sad. And DJ.
Did you ever meet DJ?
Oh yeah, I've worked with him.
Yeah.
A few different times. The first time was when I was still living here, and I was playing guitar for
Travis.
Travis.
Okay.
We did a show up in Illinois somewhere. It was one of those festivals, Elvis things, and mm-hmm. DJ was there, and that was the coolest. That's where I first met Charlie, too.
Okay.
He was sitting there around this table with a bunch of Elvis guys, and I hear this laugh, and as soon as I heard this laugh, I went, that's Charlie Hodge. I mean, I was so deep into Elvis, it was weird. So that's Charlie Hodge. I knew that laugh. So I walked over and talked to him a little bit, and these guys were sitting around with him and said, we're asking him questions. And then one guy asked a real personal question about Elvis, and Charlie just stopped. He says, right. You know what? I don't want to get into all that stuff. Let's just have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And a few minutes later, of course, the questions always go back to Elvis because he lived with him and everything. That guy asked another real personal question, and Charlie finally said, "Look, I get $2,500 for an interview. Right now, you owe me $1,000. Any more questions?" And that ended that. A few years later, I get called to come to Pigeon Forge for a weekend, like he said, mm-hmm. and it turned into 12 years. Didn't leave. The first night I met Charlie there, I said, Mr. Hodge, you probably don't remember me. I met you up at the Sheridan. I think it was at the Sheridan up in Chicago. He goes, oh, yeah, like I'm going to remember you. I said, well, no, but you were sitting around this table with a bunch of Elvis tribute artists, and one guy kept asking you really personal questions, and you cut him off by saying, I get $2,500 for an interview. And he, no, you weren't there. You were. I said, yeah, I was there. And we were like best friends ever since. And wow. He immediately turns around and says, you play guitar, right? I said, yeah. And he hands me this guitar. I said, try this out. And I look at this guitar, and it's the Gibson that he used from the 68 Comeback Special and hundreds of other Elvis concerts.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis bought it for him while they were taping that. They were at a pawn shop, paid $60 for this guitar, and Charlie,
they were doing a 68 special.
Yeah, they taped it in June of 68 to right. be released as a Christmas show.
As a Christmas special.
The Singer Christmas show, I think it was.
Singer Sewing Machines originally wanted to sponsor it, and the Colonel's Vision. I did a big article on this with Al DeVoren, the voice is Elvis mm-hmm. has left the building. Al and I co-authored a piece for Elvis International Forum magazine, and it was the Christmas special that almost wasn't. And it was supposed to be basically Elvis in a sweater sitting by the fire singing Christmas carols. Colonel Tom wanted it to be like a Perry Como Christmas, which was the big popular thing then. And Singer Sewing Machine was sponsoring because people, I guess, still sewed their own clothes back then. But it was an interesting thing because Steve Binder, who was the director producer of the show, was a young maverick. And he took Elvis to the side. He said, dude, you're not Perry Como. You're the king of rock and roll. You need to stand up and say, I'm going to rock this Christmas.
Right. Didn't they want him to come out and singing, Here Comes Santa Claus?
Yeah.
Here
yeah.
comes Santa Santa Claus suit or something like that?
Yeah, I heard there was a Santa suit involved. I know they had reindeer sweatshirts, like cardigan sweatshirts, trying to do the Perry Como thing and the Andy Williams thing. And Steve Binder must have been the burr in the saddle up for Elvis because, Elvis never stood up to the Colonel. And I think at that point he knew he was on the precipice of being obscurity or fame. And he had to make a decision because the times were changing. And thanks to Steve Binder, he rocked and he put black leather on and he did gospel and he did all the things. Some of the bits are a little schmaltzy, but that was the 60s.
Yeah.
But the fact that he rocked and it brought him back. I mean,
I think that whole set down thing was improv'd.
Yeah.
They didn't plan on that.
They brought people from the streets. Those people sitting around there, they literally went out on the street and said, hey, come on in here. We got a really big event. Can you please come in? And they didn't tell them it was Elvis. They just wanted people to come in and surprise them. There was only maybe, I think, 40 people there or something.
Yeah, they switch them out. Yeah. They switch them out. They brought people in and then let people go.
That was an interesting
thing. That was the thing that Steve walked backstage and Elvis was sitting back there with Scotty and DJ
was
and
there,
that they hadn't played together in a while. They were sitting back there jamming, just having a good time, and that's where Steve got the idea. So it worked out good. And, if you ever watch that, setting strike. Directly behind Elvis on the step, sitting on a step. I can't remember the guy's name for the life of me right now, but he's an actor. He played the on the A-Team. He was the Army general chasing the A-Team.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
His name slips
me
right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he worked as security for Elvis.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what insights did Charlie? I mean, like I said, I worked with Al. Al was part of all that, and we got to talk with Steve Binder a little bit. But when we did that article, I mean, I didn't get to talk to any of the principal players. What did Charlie have to say about that? Any memories or special thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he's not Charlie. He would talk Elvis with you if you were respectable about it, right. And if you didn't ask him a million questions,
right?
But I got, you know, I worked with him for 6 years, and I started doing this other character, and he helped me out with it because it's a comical thing, and I wasn't, you know, if I could tell a joke when I'm playing guitar, and if it doesn't go over, I can start playing guitar. But
right.
If I'm, you know, this
without
whole
the guitar just up there, yeah.
Yeah, what am I going to do next? But he helped me with flow and timing and everything, but he would talk. He'd just come out of it. Yeah, I remember we were setting that thing up and we were doing that. And we took a lunch one day and we went over. I was going over to this pawn shop that was across the way. And Elvis said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to this pawn shop." He goes, "Well, I'm going with you." He said, "Well, okay." So they went to this pawn shop and that's where Charlie found that guitar. And he picked it up and strummed it out. He said, "I'm going to buy this." And Elvis says, "Well, I'll buy it for you, Charlie." He goes, "No, you don't have to do that. I can get by, man." He goes, "Charlie, I'm buying you that guitar." He says, "No, man, I got it." He says, "Charlie, I'm your boss. I'm buying you that guitar." He said, "Thank you, Elvis." I mean, he would tell you stories like that all the time.
Wow.
You know, and there's
DJ told me that Elvis was pacing in the back. We had him on the show here a couple of times when Omar would do his Christmas shows. And he said Elvis was so nervous, like a cat on a roof. He said, he goes, "What if they don't like me? What if they don't come? What if they don't like, you know?" He was so scared that because the Beatles and the psychedelic thing and everything was happening at that time, he's like, "What if they don't care anymore?"
Yeah, that had to be a rough time for him. But Charlie had said over the years, even through the 70s, just before a show where he had maybe gained some weight in the early 70s. It wasn't in 1977 that he put on all that weight.
Right.
He would fluctuate a lot. And a lot of people think he was 400 pounds at that time when he played Indianapolis the last show. And he wasn't. When he passed away, he was 250 pounds, which is a big size for a guy that normally is 170 pounds.
Right.
So, yeah. But Charlie said he was very insecure like that all the time, and Charlie always pumped him up. And
Deej said the same thing. He said we had to rally around him and give him that support because we knew he could do things. He just didn't know he could do things.
Yeah.
And by having – that's why he always wanted his friends around. They always talk about the Memphis Mafia. He wanted his friends around him. Now, was Buddy Holly – we're getting off topic here. We're talking more Elvis than Buddy. Was Buddy Holly like that with his band? I mean, did he have an entourage? I mean, obviously the Crickets were with him for a good part of that career. But he seems like he was very much a loner from things reading that I've read of him.
Yeah, and that's what I pick up on too. He had the Crickets around him, and that was pretty much it. But he did hang out with a lot of other artists like Sam Cooke. He was a big fan of Sam Cooke, and Sam Cooke always teased him about, you know, being the white boy on this tour, or, you know, things like that, like they would do. But he said it was great. He was at a young age, he was a guy that he was headstrong. You know, if somebody told him no, and we're going to do it this way, he'd say, "No, my song's my way."
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, but everybody that I've met and talked to that have met him said he was the greatest guy. You know, he was everybody, you know, remember when grunge just hit hard?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody went to Seattle because they wanted to be recorded up there.
Right.
Well, when Buddy Holly went to New York, everybody flocked to New York to be recorded or produced by this guy. I mean, he produced Eddie Cochran stuff. He's on Eddie Cochran albums doing backups and Gene Vincent stuff. So, you know,
I knew he worked with Eddie. I didn't know he worked with Gene.
Yeah, I only know this through Jerry,
okay.
Who is his guitar player. But Jerry had this amp sitting in his room, the studio. It's a little bitty tweed 12-inch speaker. It's just a small, little amp. And its schematics on it were handwritten by Leo Fender on the back. It was made for... Yeah, it's the weirdest thing, and Jerry had it. It's in a museum now. Jerry's gone. It's in the Bob Timmons. He runs the Rockabilly Hall of Fame Museum.
Mm-hmm.
It's in that museum now. But I guess Jeff Beck called and wanted to buy that because Jeff Beck is a big fan too.
Right.
But Jerry told me stories about Gene Vincent and them touring together, and he said,
"I
wish I was on it."
When Cliff Gallop was in the band?
He came on in 1959. So
Cliff
I'm
was
not
earlier,
sure.
I think.
Yeah.
Because I know Beck was a huge Cliff Gallop fan.
Well, there's a video out you can buy. It's called The Town Hall Party which was a show out of Compton, California, back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And it was a live show. They had Joe Mathis, who played that double-neck Mosrite guitar, you know. The Collins kids were regulars on there.
Rockabillys, yeah.
Yeah, great. And you can buy these videos. And I bought the video of Gene Vincent's. And he was on there two different times. And the first half was Cliff.
Okay.
And the second time he was on there, it was Jerry.
Yeah. Okay.
Jerry wrote a song called She, Little Sheila. Okay. Which was Gene Vincent. She, Little Sheila, best little girl around. That was a song written by Jerry.
Wow. We are talking with Kenny James, also with us, Danny Mondell, drummer of Ray Vaughan. They are performing with the rest of the guys tonight at the Art Theater in downtown Hobart, and it is Buddy Holly's 82nd birthday today. We're doing a Buddy Holly celebration here on Midwest Beat, here on Lakeshore. Tomorrow night, you guys will be at the Acorn Theater, and we talked about tonight's show. You're opening with the Spaniels are opening for you, and Danny said something earlier in the show, and he mentioned it last night. He goes, the one thing about working with you is you never know what you're going to do. You know what you're going to start with and end with, and he goes, in between, it's all like chaos. So, Danny, tell us a little bit about 2 years now you've been working with Kenny. What's it like to do the shows, and is he always like that?
Well, yeah, like you said earlier, you get what you see, and you see what you get. So, no, it's a good high-energy show, I'm telling you that. It's a great show. Kenny does a great job, and the band is fantastic. But we have a set list.
He just got a raise.
We have a set list, and we go over it, and everybody goes, yeah, well, we'll work that out, and we'll do it. And then so we start always with the same songs, and we end with the same songs, and everything in the middle is whatever.
Wow.
And a lot of times, and it depends how it's set up on stage, and Kenny will look at me, and you know, he turns around because I'm behind him in the middle and he's out front. And he'll turn around and this is what I get. I'm like, okay, I still don't know what song we're doing.
Now, in his opinion, I forget. You know, he's such a good guy and I feel like we've been friends forever and we've played together forever. And you know, if you think 2 years isn't
that
a long time. But I forget that. Sometimes I'll think of, early in the morning. Mm-hmm. Well, you're going to miss me early in the morning. And I turn to, hey, we're going to do. And he's like, look at me. It's like, oh, I forgot. He hasn't done that in so long. He hasn't done it. But, you know.
Wow. We worked through it.
But let me tell you what. Any song that I throw out there, he's got the beat. He's got a beat behind it. If he doesn't know the song, never heard it in his life, he's strong. And he, as I said before, he's the best drummer we've had in our group. Mm-hmm. And I'm not taking away from those in the past. I love them all. But he's the best. But more importantly than him being my drummer, he's one of my best friends. And that's more important to me.
Now, were you a Buddy fan before you met Kenny?
Yeah,
casual, serious.
I'm a little bit of everybody fan, other than when it gets some of that heavy new stuff. But but yeah, any of that old classic stuff. I mean, like, you know, Kenny will turn around, hey, let's, you know, Danny's gonna play Wipeout. You know, Safari. So in 1963 did that, and first time I did that, I'm like, okay, I haven't done this, and we got done. I said, I haven't played that since high school. But wow. You know, that's just the way the show goes.
Right, right.
And,
speaking of how the show goes, Kenny, I'm going to throw it way back. When we did Obie's in Highland.
Oh, yeah.
Years and years ago. And when we did Romano's in Cherryville and places like that. Ray Vaughan, you know, the format of the show, as I recall, Ray Vaughan would come on and they would do three or four songs, you know, non-Buddy songs. Mm-hmm. And then you would come out. Is that still how you do it?
We've changed it up a little bit. We go towards more of a straight show with me, so they don't play beforehand.
Okay.
But the reason they don't,
and it was almost like they were sort of an opening.
Yeah, and the reason they don't now is because, and it might be kind of selfish on my part, but they'll be playing songs like, man, I want to be out there playing. So,
even non-Buddy songs.
Yeah, it's okay. Towards the end of the show, you know, or we come out, we do encores. We'll do anything from Moni to Tush.
Wow. Do you do it Buddy style?
I don't know if I could do. Here she come now, come on and moan it. No, I don't think so.
Buddy Holly would have been 82 years old. He was only in the business really about 2 years creating music. But his influence, his fingerprints are still heard today. In fact, about a year, 2 years ago, Peter Asher was here in the program. And Peter was telling us about this project he did called Listen to Me, Buddy Holly. And he got all these different artists, Chris Isaac, Jeff Lynne of ELO, Lyle Lovett, Natalie Merchant, Stevie Nicks. And they all did a tribute to Buddy's songs. And we're going to play one right now from that project. And I'll tell you who it is after this. Check it out.
Just you know why. Why you and I will by and by no true love waits. Sometimes we'll sigh, sometimes we'll cry.
Raise your hand. Do you know who that was? Do you? Do you? Do you? That was off the Listen to Me, Buddy Holly album featuring all sorts of different contemporary artists who were not only big fans but also admitted to being influenced heavily by the one and only Buddy Holly. That was the California sound man, Mr. Jackson Browne. He was all about the singer-songwriter stuff, you know, Pretender and all that. Well, Jackson was a huge fan of Buddy Holly, and he gave us True Love Ways. We also, on that album, there's Stevie Nicks, Not Fade Away, Pat Moynihan was on there, and there's Jeff Lynne of ELO, Lyle Lovett, Natalie Merchant, Patrick Stump, a Fall Out Boy. Also on that as well. And, of course, I mentioned earlier how the Beatles took their name in tribute to the Crickets. Ringo Starr is on there as well. Maybe we'll get to another song from that album in just a bit. But we are in studio right now with Kenny James. Kenny James and Ray Vaughn, and Ray Vaughn's drummer Danny Mondell is with us. And they're performing tonight at the Art Theater in Hobart, Indiana, 230 Main Street, 7:30 concert. Special guest, The Spaniels Forever, will be opening. And then tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern time, it's Buddy Holly and Ray Vaughan, and without the Spaniels, at the Acorn Theater. And I understand that show's going really well. I got a call from them today and said that that radio, you and I did radio yesterday to support that out in Michigan, and it's doing extremely well. They're getting some great response from people. So
great.
I'm excited that they're happy you're back.
Yeah, I am too, because we had a great time up there last year. And it was a Sunday afternoon show last year, and tomorrow night would be better. It's Saturday night.
Saturday night.
And I just got paid. Whole lot of money, don't try to save.
Did Buddy ever do that
one?
Yes,
he did.
Did he really? I don't have that here. But that's an old Little Richard tune.
He did Rip It Up and Ready Teddy.
Wow. Now, did he ever perform with Little Richard, do you know?
Yes, they toured
that
together.
That would be one hell of a tour.
Yeah, getting a little, well, Little Richard has put out a book, had put out a book years ago talking about his touring with Buddy Holly, and maybe I can talk to you a little bit about it later, but yeah, they toured together and had a good time.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, Buddy Holly, when he heard things, he just wanted to cover them, and mm-hmm. it was just like an like paying tribute, you know.
Right.
So he toured with Little Richard and did his songs. He went and seen the movie Jailhouse Rock and did You're So Square.
Right.
You know, so, and, you know, that's a song that's in our set list as well. But, I mean, it wasn't all, you know, it wasn't only about him and his music. He liked it all. So
now, when you do You're So Square, do you introduce that to the audience so they don't think you're just doing an Elvis song, that you're doing Buddy doing Elvis?
Yeah,
and tell the story.
I kind of let people know, or some. I try not to be too much of a historian on stage. You know, I just want to go through the music and give them the show. But I can stand up there and talk, as you know. I can stand up there and talk forever. But and sometimes they'll nudge me a little, hey, you know, to get me going. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of little cool things about songs that people don't know. Peggy Sue was actually a song he wrote for his sister and his niece, and it was called Cindy Lou.
Okay, but it wasn't
it wasn't named after
somebody's girlfriend.
Right. It was Jerry Allison, the drummer. He says, "Man, if you change that name, I can get close to this girl." And he says, "Well, change it to what?" He said, "Peggy Sue." And he goes, "You're going to go out with Peggy Sue?" He goes, "Only if you change the name of the song am I going to be able to." And they went out, got married.
Wow.
All because he changed the name of that song for him.
That's a trip.
Yeah.
So was Buddy like the best man there, I hope?
Yeah. Yeah, he was. they actually, I think they honeymooned together in Acapulco.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. Kenny James is with us talking about Buddy Holly on his 82nd birthday, or what would have been. Speaking of what would have been, what do you think? And Danny, you as well. What do you think Buddy Holly might have accomplished? I mean, look at all he did in less than 2 years. What would he have accomplished had he not gotten on that plane that day?
I think it's out of this world. I mean, you look at some of the people that didn't stick around, and like Michael Jackson, some of them people that could stay and do a lot of stuff like that. And there's no telling where it would have went. I mean, really, it could be.
Do you think he would have stayed with performing, or do you think he was more interested in the behind-the-scenes stuff? I mean, he dabbled in so much.
I think he would have performed, and rock and roll probably would have been different.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know,
taking it in a little bit of a direction.
Yeah.
A lot of his songs are so have a lot of country feel to them anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think he would have been.
We were talking about that before you was that on air or off air? I can't remember. Danny and I were talking about that Elvis and Buddy both had country roots, and they added a little backbeat behind it and became rock and roll. It was pretty much country music with a beat. And so, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
With his background with country and everything, I mean, he started out young. He played with his brothers, and they gave him a fiddle, and they put grease on his bow. They were playing at a fair, so he wouldn't sound so loud because he was just a little guy and mm-hmm. everything. But, you know, he grew up playing. His brothers were also accomplished musicians, and his sister is a great singer. And
Are any of them living anymore?
Yes. Larry is still in Lubbock, and his sister, Sherry, is in Lubbock. So
still performing?
She does perform. She's an artist as well. If you can look up Sherry Holly on Facebook, she makes these textiles of Buddy Holly pictures, or pictures of Buddy Holly and things like that. And it's great artwork, great stuff that she does. But I think he may have had that not have happened in 59, he would have got more towards the country, maybe back to Nashville. He was very sour with Matt Nashville because of the way they treated his first recording of That'll Be the Day. You know, he went there first before to New York, and it's a very laid back country. They didn't have drums on it. They wouldn't let his guys play on it. Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. You know, it was really country of that time.
Right.
But I think he enjoyed the studio more than and writing more than he did performing. And I get asked this question a lot. I think he would have been a Phil Spector before
Phil Spector.
Yeah, I really do.
Wow. Well, yeah. As you mentioned, he was working with Gene Vincent and Eddie Cochran. I didn't know
recording
about
Gene's. Danny and the Juniors and all these guys were going up there to record at the studio with him.
Now, was he still working with Norman Petty when he was doing? Were they still a partnership?
They were. There was a. There's a gray area. I hear different things about it, but I think when they split and he just became a solo artist as Buddy Holly, and the Crickets had left, he let them keep the name, and they were. They said, hey, you know, you're much as part of this, and you can, if they use the name, you can be paid for it. He goes, no, I don't want that. I want them to have it. And and they went back to Clovis and worked with Norman Petty and recorded with a lot of different people.
That's when Sonny joined.
Mm-hmm.
And became the lead singer.
And to this day, the ones that are still living are in Nashville and recording with people. You know, they worked with Amy Lou Harris a lot. So, I think he may have made it back to Nashville because that's probably where it would have taken him. The calling would have been with the songs that he wrote and everything. Mm-hmm. Look, Mickey Gilley, a huge hit with True Love Ways.
Right.
Which, when I was in Branson.
I just saw him in Branson. He was getting ready to close his theater, though, when I was there.
Yeah, yeah. So. I heard his daughter was taking over or something, but I don't know. But when I was there, they have a show out there that it's invitation only. It's almost like the Grand Ole Opry. It's the Branson Opry. And I was invited to come and perform on the show. And it just so happened my mom and dad were in town, and they went to the show with me. And the lady asked me, she says, what is your favorite Buddy Holly song? And I can't narrow it down, but my mom was there, and it was close to her birthday. I said, well, this next song we're going to do is my mom's favorite. I would like to do for her. I said, it's called True Love Ways.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, oh, that Mickey Gilley song.
Or that Jackson Brown song that we just played.
Yeah, I said, no. Buddy Holly had it first.
Oh, man.
I hated it for her. I made her look bad or embarrass her, but I think she, again.
People don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to know your history to really appreciate certain things. And on that note, real quick, Danny, what's your favorite Buddy song? Is there one you really like to play?
Well, because I change it around from the way that they do it, heartbeat, and he knows that, because I do the Danny way. It's a little Latin rumba thing going on, and I throw that beat down, and that's just fun for me. It's easy. But it's just I just think that makes that song.
All right. One of my favorites is definitely Rock Around with Ollie V. And I like Peggy Sue Got Married, which a lot of people don't know as well. Kenny, you picked out, I said, what do you want to play today? And you said Rock Around with Ollie V. Is that a favorite of yours as well?
Man, it's a good, raw.
You don't hear it anywhere.
No. You know, the first time I heard that song, I was coming down 41, and I stopped in Kentland, Indiana at a little a hamburger joint there. We stopped to eat, and they had a jukebox. And I was looking there, and a big Stray Cats fan. I'd seen this 45 of the Stray Cats, and they were doing Looking for Somebody to Love and Rocking Around with Ollie V. I said, wow, I think I know those songs. But I didn't know they recorded that. And sure enough, I put it on there and played both of those songs. And it's just, they played it just like that. It's just raw rock and roll at its best.
Well, let's do it now. This is Buddy and Rocking Around with Ollie V. More with Kenny James and Danny when we return.
Whoa, we gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues tonight. Rock is everything gonna be high, cause tonight we gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues. Well, I got a little gal I call Ivy, come from Memphis, Memphis, Tennessee, and tonight we gonna rock and rock around with Ivy, Ivy, say she gonna do me right tonight. I'm gonna wear my blue suede shoes tonight and tonight. We gonna rock and rock around with Ivy, Ivy, well, we gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues tonight. Rock is everything gonna be high, cause tonight we gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues. I'm gonna shout, laugh, holler, and giggle tonight. I'm gonna shake it just a little in the middle of the night. Cause tonight, we gonna rock around with our baby and holler, holler, baby. Well, I think Mr. Cop will be tonight. If you try to put a stop to me tonight, cause tonight, we gonna rock around with our baby and holler, holler, holler. Well, we're gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues tonight. Rock's everything gonna be high. Cause tonight, we gonna rock to the rhythm and the blues.
Rocking with Ollie V, Buddy Holly. Good stuff there. And, of course, made famous also again by the Stray Cats. In the studio with us, Kenny James, Danny Mordell of Ravon. They are performing tonight at the Art Theater in downtown Hobart. It is Buddy Holly's 82nd birthday. And a big happy birthday to Buddy Holly. 22 years old, he passed away when the plane went down, the day the music died, in a cornfield in Cedar Rapids? Clear Lake, Iowa.
Right. Mason City is where they flew out of, which is like going from Hobart to Merrillville. I mean, it's that close.
So they weren't in the air more than a few minutes.
About 5 miles.
Wow.
They said they sat there and watching the plane taking off, and, you know, they said they may have seen it go down. Because with the blizzard and everything, it was just, it looks like they're going off into the distance. They didn't know it. They didn't know the plane went down until the next morning when...
When they didn't arrive where they were supposed to?
Right.
Wow.
In fact, they thought, they had also reported that Tommy Alsup was killed in the crash because...
He was supposed to.
He was supposed to go on the... But he gave a seat and said, hey, buddy, I've got a telegram or some money wired or whatever it was. Can you pick it up for me when you get there? And Buddy said, well, I'll need your wallet, your ID.
Mm-hmm.
And he handed him his wallet, and they found all that on there, and they reported that he was killed as well.
Wow. Now, one of the things, we were talking about how he left with the Crickets, and at that point he was on his own, correct, with a different band?
Yeah, and...
And Waylon was... The bass player, mm-hmm. Waylon Jennings.
Right.
Early on in Waylon's career, he did a lot of session work, and he played country, and obviously, and did some rock and roll. And I remember working with Waylon in 1988 at Superfest. He had just come back from having open heart surgery, and I had the opportunity to meet him, and he gave me a beautiful vest. Actually, it's not beautiful. It's kind of grungy because everyone was wearing them on the crew. It was a beautiful vest to me. It was a white vest with satin lining. It's got the Waylon wings on them. It's what part of my collection. But I remember him telling me when we interviewed, your story with the Elvis questions. It's a certain point you don't want to talk about certain things. And I was a younger reporter, and I said, you know, I know this is hard on you. I said, but can you just tell me something about Buddy Holly? And he was telling me about what a brilliant guy he was and this and that. And then he suddenly gets choked up, and he's talking about how every day he values being alive because he shouldn't be.
Right.
And he should have been on that plane, and I'll let you tell that story.
There's a song that he did a long time ago is what it's called, that he mentions that.
He didn't talk much about it, though. Yeah. I mean, he kept that close to the vest, so to speak.
Yeah, there's it's just a one line in the song that refers to it. It says, "I guess you don't need to. I don't have to tell you who I gave my seat to on that plane."
Mm-hmm.
And they had trouble throughout that tour. It was a terrible tour with the weather and everything. They went through three buses. The heaters kept breaking. It was so bad. Their drummer at the time, Carl Bunch, was hospitalized a few days before Clear Lake with frostbite.
From being on the bus?
From being on the bus.
Wow. That's cold.
JP, our Big Bopper, bought a big downfilled sleeping bag that he would huddle in on the bus. I mean, that's
how cold it was.
I mean, it wasn't all glamorous touring in, you know. And in fact, on the Clear Lake tour show was an add-on that came. It wasn't originally set on the schedule. So anybody out there that's got a big poster that says Clear Lake, this is an original Clear Lake poster, that's not true. They didn't make big posters for him for that show. They had little flyers that they made handwritten and put around town and stuff like mm-hmm. that. You know, with all the things going on, and they were always kidding around. They're like brothers. They're like best buds. They were kidding around each other all the time. And they drove him to the airport. They get ready to get on the plane, and Buddy said, which was only like the three blocks.
And they got the plane because the bus broke down.
Yeah,
right?
The bus broke down. They paid. Buddy chartered a plane. It was $35 a person. He paid for. He was going to take himself, Tommy Alsip, and Waylon to go on to Moorhead, Moorhead in North Dakota.
I think so.
And they were going to get up there just to get up there early and get a good night's rest. They had a lot of clothes. A lot of the stars or people had given them clothes to take them and wash them for them. They'd be, you know, because they were wearing the same thing for days.
Right, right.
And he gets ready to get on a plane, and Buddy turned to Waylon and says, "Don't get no frostbite on that bus." And Waylon says, "Oh, I hope your old plane crashes."
Mm.
You know, last word you say to your best friend in the world. Yeah, that would bother me for my lifetime too.
Right. Wow. Now, yeah. Why wasn't Waylon on there? Who did he give his seat to?
Well, he had.
That was a coin toss, wasn't it?
Yeah. What they did when they got to Clear Lake earlier that day, Buddy chartered. They found out the airport and go, "Oh, I'll charter a plane and we'll just go." Because he was working on getting a pilot's license. He wanted to fly himself. And that's part of that whole conspiracy thing that we can get into later. But when everybody found out, they kept, you know, Waylon kept being bugged by Bopper. Says, "Give me your, you know, man, I ain't riding on that bus." And Bopper says, "All right, I'll give you $15 in my sleeping bag." He says, "Well, all right."
Wow.
Yeah. And then,
that was an easy bribe.
And then Richie, as Tommy said,
he had
a cold. He wasn't feeling good and kept bugging Tommy Alsip. And Tommy says, "All right, we'll flip a coin." And he flipped a coin and
lost.
Lost.
And won in the
well,
long run.
Yeah.
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 Wow. That's and of course, Roger was the pilot.
Right.
And he passed away as well. And just so strange on how things worked out. But I do think that things happen for a reason. And, of course, Waylon Jennings gave us an incredible history of music himself, along with Jesse and his band. Did you ever get a chance to work with Waylon at all?
Oh, no. No.
He was a nice man.
Yeah.
You know, he was crusty. And you could tell that just
tell
by he carried himself.
Say something wrong or,
yeah,
you know.
But I just remember being very intimidated. And, you know, I was handling the hospitality at this event. And it was the only time I had a chance to really talk with him. And we had done this wonderful interview prior to the event by phone. And then we had done a short one in person. And this was well after the fact. And they were getting ready to perform. And I knew he had had his heart surgery. So I came on their bus. I'm like, "Mr. Jennings, is there anything you need? You need more towels? You need some water? Blah, blah, blah." He goes, "No, I need you to sit your butt down." He used a different word. Mm-hmm. Take a hand to this game. He goes, "So-and-so, someone in his band," he goes, "had just like hit the bathroom or done something. I had to go sound check." And he goes, we need to keep playing." And it was a pinochle. Yeah. And I have no idea, even to this day, how to play pinochle. So the guy that was sitting next to me, some other guy in the band, was like guiding me just so they could keep playing. And then I do remember we did a hand of blackjack for something. And it was, I forget what it was, but I was there for that too. And I was on the bus maybe a total of 10, 12 minutes doing that. We did like a hand or two of Pinochle, and then the guy came back and it was like, okay, you can leave. And I said, okay, thank you very much. He goes, you know what? You're a good kid. And he threw this vest at me. And it was kind of grungy, but he goes, a little souvenir today. And that's the vest that I have.
That is so cool.
And it's so I'll cool. have to show that to you. He's got the Waylon wings on him, and yeah. It's pretty neat.
Now, JP, nice guy. Again, JP Bopper Jr., he told me that it was late in life when he found out who his father was. Mm-hmm. It was kind of hidden from him.
Because his mom was pregnant when the Bopper went down.
Right. And I she had a little a girl previous from a previous marriage, I believe is what it was. And don't quote me on that, but I think that's what he said. But he said, and when he found out that his dad did all this stuff and he wanted to know more about his dad, his grandparents opened up this trunk and said he knew his dad was a DJ. He says, your dad was the Big Bopper. And here's, you know.
Wow.
And I think he was in his late teens at that time. And so he went to find out more about it, and he went to this fair where Waylon Jennings was playing, and he said he heard, you know, Waylon was part of that tour and everything, and he says the bus door was open. They had all just went up there, and he walked up on the bus and says, I'm JP Richardson Jr., tell me about my dad. And Waylon said he was looking at a ghost.
Wow. Yeah, he looked a lot like him. I remember I got to work with Bopper Jr. one time, and he was fun. He was a fun guy.
Yeah.
And
he had a dry humor too. It's just kind of just.
I didn't know that leopard jacket was his dad's.
Yeah, he had a few of them. Now he had some made. Now maybe I'm not sure if you
saw the
one,
real
but,
one. Yeah.
Yeah, but he did. He carried that. He always carried a pair of dice in his pocket that belonged mm-hmm. to his dad. His dad always shot dice everywhere he went. And I guess when they exhumed his body back in 2000 or 2001. They were moving him to another part of the cemetery where they can put a big monument for him. He said, I want an autopsy done, because there was no autopsy ever done on Bopper. And they said he didn't die in the crash, and he was trying to walk to get help, and he didn't make it, and because he was found like
so
50
far
yards.
Away, yeah.
And they had from UT Nashville, Knoxville, they had Bill Blask, who's a forensic pathologist, fly to Beaumont. They exhumed his body, took him inside this shelter. They opened the casket, and it was just Dr. Blass, Bopper Jr., and his son. And they opened it. He said, first time I ever laid eyes on his dad. He said, wow. And there's a book written.
There's photos online of some of the exhumation, too.
Yeah, but not of
right.
the body and everything. But he said he was very... Bill Blass says, even for the 50s, that was the embalming that was done was very pristine, because when they opened him up, he looked like he was ready to go on stage. Of wow. course, he, you know, what happens,
right.
but, you know, it wasn't just bones, you
right.
know. And he said he had a little facial hair. His hair was in a perfect crew cut, and he reached in his dad's pocket of his coat and pulled out a pair of dice.
That's the ones he carried with him?
And the pair he had in his pocket, he put back in there, was his other. He had a couple pair, I guess. But, and what they did, they flew the body to Sevierville, Tennessee, to what's now LeConte Medical Center. And that's where he did the autopsy. And it was proven that it was blunt force trauma. That's what the cause of death.
So did they think he survived?
He said he had seven
enough?
Major injuries that would have.
So he couldn't have crawled
no,
for help.
No,
he just got thrown.
But you know, and over the years, imagine you being the Bopper and you being telling stories like, "Oh, your dad was playing around with a pistol that belonged to Buddy Holly, because they found Buddy Holly's pistol in the field that following spring. They didn't know it was Buddy Holly's, but it was a five shot 38 snub nose revolver sitting on an empty chamber." And the farmer picked it up and looked at it and fired it off. It worked. And then he realized there was a plane crash here. So he turned it in, come to find out. And that's where they get the whole bullet. Oh, they were playing with Buddy Holly's gun and shot. No.
Yeah.
You know how those
right.
theories start and everything. And
wow.
He just got tired of hearing it. And when they were going to do that, he said, well, let's put all this stuff to rest.
And hopefully they'll make a movie, as we talked about. That was Bopper Jr.'s dream, and maybe it'll happen someday. It'd be nice to see, to kind of put it in perspective and to give him his just due. Yeah. We are talking with Kenny James. He is a professional Buddy Holly tribute artist for many years. He's originally from Northwest Indiana, and he's done time in Oregon, Las Vegas, Pigeon Forge, Branson. I mean, you've played pretty much. Where have you not played? You've pretty much played across the country.
You know, where I haven't played is from Philadelphia or Pennsylvania, that
the East Coast?
I've not played the Northeast. I've been to the Carolinas. I've been to Florida, but I've not been to New York. I've not been,
Well, you're so busy down south, you barely play here. I mean, you come up here, every couple of years you'll get a date or two.
Well, and when I was with the show with Bopper, I mean, we were playing the West Coast a lot. We played a lot in New Mexico. We played a lot in Oregon and Washington, a lot of the casino gigs and things like that. And unfortunately, when he passed away, that kind of just – he was the draw. And, right. I wish we could still do those shows because we have a guy that does Richie Valens. His name's Ray Anthony. That's he does a great job. He looks more like Lou Diamond Phillips from the movie. But he does a great job. And we had a great, great show going. And they also worked with another guy.
John Mueller.
Who does a great job.
Yeah, he does.
And
In fact, when I saw Bopper, he was with John Mueller.
Yeah, and they've went on and they're doing other things, and it's just I like what I would do a big cast like that again, and I'd love it. But I like what we do. Mm-hmm. It's
being on your own.
Yeah. I mean, it's all falls on me, and I don't have to worry about, I got so much time here because this guy's coming on next or this guy,
Right.
Not that I'm against it. I like doing that, but it's more fun because you have more time on stage when you do your own show, and you get to put more.
And you did that a lot when you were with the tribute show, Legends and stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, with Legends and even in Pigeon Forge at Memories Theater, it's 15 minutes to 20 minutes.
So you do like four songs and take a bow and leave, and the next guy comes on.
Pretty much.
Wow.
And then when you're doing that six nights a week, you got to do, if you only got that much time, you have to do the ones that are, that'll be the day, Peggy Sue, Maybe Baby, you got to squeeze those in. And you can't do like the other ones you want to do that we do, like It Doesn't Matter Anymore and things like that. It's more fun when you have an hour or so to kill or to work with.
We're going to play a song. You just mentioned Peggy Sue, and I was talking about the impact Buddy has had on different artists. We played Jackson Browne, and I said Lyle Lovett, and ELO's, Jeff Lynne. All these people were on this Listen to Me Buddy album produced by Peter Asher of Peter and Gordon fame, also the former A&R guy for Apple Records with that band The Beatles you might have heard of. This is actually one of the newer artists that was on that collection, which was actually recorded for his Buddy's 75th birthday, as I understand. Now we're on his 82nd. So this band, sadly, I think has broken up since then, but they were active from 2006 to about 2015 or 16. They were, I guess, one of the newer bands, and the daughter of Peter Asher is actually in the group. This is just to show the length and the breadth of Buddy's influence. This is a newer band called Cobra Starship, and this is off that album, Listen to Me, Buddy. It is, of course, Peggy Sue.
I love you, Peggy Sue.
Peggy Sue, Pretty Little Peggy Sue. That is Cobra Starship. That was done a couple of years back off the Listen to Me Buddy album produced by Peter Asher. Peter's daughter is actually a member or was a member of Cobra Starship. And good stuff there. I'm trying to remember what her name was. Victoria Asher. And she did the girl part on that. But that was off the Listen to Me Buddy album, a great album that was featuring all sorts of different people over the years that were influenced by him. We have another song we're going to get to. I'm going to let Kenny tell you a little bit about another tribute. There's been a lot of tributes to Buddy Holly over the years.
Oh, yeah. And this CD, it was a CD that came out earlier than the one you're playing. It's called Not Fade Away, Remembering Buddy Holly. Features Marty Stewart and Steve Earle and the Mavericks. And the really cool song on there is a song called, I'll let you hear it. It's the Hollies with Buddy Holly.
Oh.
Yeah, very cool.
Okay,
very cool.
Okay, well, let's do that. We'll talk more about it. This is the Hollies with Buddy Holly, and we're going to check it out. It happened. pretty Peggy Sue done got married. And that was the follow-up to Peggy Sue, and that was the Hollies. Again, we were telling you about how Buddy Holly influenced so many people. The Hollies took their name in tribute to Buddy and just pluralized it. The Hollies with the real deal. Buddy Holly singing Peggy Sue Got Married, and what was the name of the album?
It was called Remembering Buddy.
Wow.
Yeah, Not Fade Away. Remembering Buddy.
1993.
93, I believe, yeah. And, you know, the Mavericks do a really cool version of Midnight Shift on there. And, you know, Marty Stewart and Steve Earle do a really cool version of Crying, Waiting, Hoping, which is one on the top of my list of one of my
favorite. Okay, well, we'll get to that before we say goodbye.
At the very end of that album, it's a very sad song. The last song that everybody says the last song he wrote is done by Waylon Jennings called Learning the Game.
Okay.
In fact, that song, Peggy Sue Got Married, was not a finished song. A lot of the songs from that album are like that. Crying, Waiting, Hoping was not a finished song.
So they just brought session people in? What was the family's take on that? Were they okay
with it?
Well,
it was the studio did it.
The studio owned it.
Yeah.
So
And again, there's an album called The Apartment Tapes, and it's just Buddy Holly and his acoustic guitar and doing those songs.
Just demos.
Yeah, and then there's some where he's doing playing his electric guitar, and he's doing like the coaster stuff, and it was just him and his guitar trying things out, like Les Paul, Mary
Ford,
baby. Oh sweet baby.
Oh yeah.
You know that. And, you know, Smokey Joe's Cafe.
Right.
You know. He just dabbled in a lot of different songs and styles, man. He was amazing. And, you know, remember Nancy Griffin?
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Griffin? She does Well, All Right.
I don't think I've heard her version.
It's really laid
back. She's such a petite.
Well, all right, so I'm being foolish. You know that voice?
Yeah.
It's dynamite. You love it.
Wow. Yeah. She's next to Emmylou Harris. She's probably one of my favorite country singer types. I mean, she's not pure country, but she's very country. Yeah. Country folk, I guess. We are on Midwest Beat here on 89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio. We are celebrating Buddy Holly's birthday. He would have been 82 years old had he not died 60 years ago at the age of 22. Kind of reflecting on what he might have done, talking about some of the artists he's influenced, some stories that have been said and shared about him. Some are factual, some are maybes. We don't know. There's a lot of innuendos always around people that die young and early, especially celebrities. And we definitely are realizing the fact that his music and him as a person, as a songwriter, as a producer, have influenced lots of people that we have enjoyed over the years. Most recently, their Cobra Starship, doing Peggy Sue. We also heard Jackson Browne covering his stuff. We heard the Hollies singing with Buddy Holly himself. And that was done in 93, and that was around the time when, 90s was when, like, Nat King Cole and Natalie Cole did Unforgettable, and Lisa Marie Presley did Don't Cry Daddy with Elvis. It was a lot of that mashup of vintage
Roseanne
video.
Cash did Tennessee Flat Top Box.
That's
and they,
right.
They melded it with Johnny.
Yeah, so there was a lot of that.
And she says she didn't know that was her dad's song.
Wow.
I guess. I don't.
That's surprising. But tonight is the night. It is the birthday party at the Art Theater. It'll be the first show I'm involved with at the Art Theater. They've been doing music there now for about a year. I don't think they show too many movies there anymore. I know they still do the Rocky Horror on the weekends, but it's mostly a concert venue now, 400 seats. You got to come out. You got to see this show. We've got the Spaniels Forever opening the show with some classic doo-wop and R&B, and I'm sure they'll head into the Temptations Coasters area as well as their own stuff. And then Ray Vaughan will be there with Kenny James, and they're doing a tribute to Buddy. How long is the show?
As long as I want it. I mean,
Danny just smiles, going, "See, I told you."
am I right? Sometimes it's an hour, sometimes it's an hour and a half, sometimes it's 2 hours. It's just we just have a good time.
So if the people are into it and it can tributes to you, then
The band doesn't kill me for staying on stage too long.
I think last year at Three Oaks we were plus 2 hours
yeah,
without
yeah,
an intermission.
Yeah. We went strong.
And that was right after a show the night
before. Well, I know they're excited in Three Oaks. Now, tomorrow is at the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks. Tonight is the Art here in Northwest Indiana.
I'm excited going to the Art.
It's the first time for you.
Yeah, it is. It's the first time for me, but there's a really cool record store a couple of doors down from it that I want to go
ding,
to
ding,
again.
Ding, ding, ding. Thanks for that plug. Of course, talking about the record bin, yours truly there. Last night, we have a 24/7 internet station there, an internet channel, I should say. And last night, Kenny and I were talking on air and playing a lot of Buddy Holly records and just having fun old school way. Yeah. You know, just like, let's turn on the mics and play some records. And we literally played records.
Really? Yeah, we did. And we had a great time. And you know what? We might wind up there tonight after the show, having an after party in there.
That would be fun. We should do that.
I was just being funny.
No, we could, depending what time we end,
maybe
we'll unlock the store and I'll see if my lovely wife Alice will make coffee and bring donuts and be the hostess with the mostest, and maybe we'll have some fun.
You never know
what can happen. See, that's the thing. You're like Buddy Holly, my way.
Right.
I own the store. You run the band.
Yeah.
Hey, it's whatever we want to do.
I do run the band, but I try not. I just try to be a member of the band. I try to put everybody's input into it, and you know, ultimately it comes down to me. But I respect everybody in the band and their
who's
decision.
Who's in the band? Give them a shout out.
That's what I was getting at. Of course, we got Dan Mendel. He's from Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Like I said, he's the best, and we love him. And we've got Pat Moore. He's from he lives in Sherrillville now, but he's from the Hessville section as well. We grew up together.
He's been with you for a long time.
He's been with me for about 3 years.
Okay.
We've known each other forever and played in different bands and stuff. But Ronnie Riddell. We've known each other since middle school. We started out.
He's like your music director, isn't he?
He is. He's the band leader. And we've been together since the start of this, really. But even more so, a lot of people remember us. We played at a place in Hessville called the Powwow.
Oh, my God. The drive-in? The Powwow?
Yeah.
That was kind of like the Blue Top of Hessville.
Yeah. And it was Pharaoh's. Was it Powwow first and then Pharaoh's?
It was Powwow in the 60s and 70s.
And then it became Pharaoh's.
So I don't remember Pharaoh's. I do remember Powwow.
Yeah. We did an acoustic thing in there together. Remember Terry Green?
Name's
an acoustic
familiar.
Player. I met him there. He played around the area a lot. He was on public access a lot with his show.
Okay.
And stuff. But that's how we started. We were called Bug and Tug, and we played a lot of Everly
Who
Brothers.
Who was Bug?
Ronnie was Bug.
Okay.
And that was our nicknames when we were kids, that our family had given us, and we got together and said, you be Bug, I'll be Tug. And
there you go.
And, it was great. And we did a lot of Simon and Garfunkel and Everly Brothers. And Everly Brothers, Phil Everly, best
influence.
Friend. Yeah, I met Phil at a NAMM show in California, and I said I'm a Buddy Holly tribute artist as well, and we stood there and talked to Buddy for a long time because he was a big fan and friends. Buddy wrote a couple songs that he wanted them to have, and they said it was really good. Keep it.
Wow. Do you remember what it was?
You got. There's a couple of them. There's Wishing.
Okay.
Heartbeat is actually one of them.
Was actually for the Everlys? Wow.
And he would overdub his voice. It was first artist to do overdubbing using his own voice. He only did that because he wanted to put the harmony in there so he could show the Everly Brothers how he had it done. Heartbeat, Doesn't Matter Anymore, Words of Love. He did a song, Little Susie's Out Again or something like that. I can't remember the title.
So he double-tracked his own voice just to do a demo to show them what it would sound like.
That's
it. And, of course, those are the ones that were eventually released.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I remember working with the Everlys in 88. Like I said, Superfest, the same show Waylon was on. It was a festival, and they were one of the acts, and independently, they were the nicest guys.
Yeah.
But yeah. I just remember the feuding going on. They had there's this big stage, and they would come on. Each guy would come on a different side of the stage and enter. In the middle, they'd talk. And remember when Dad did this, and we grew up and went in the treehouse, and then we'd play this. And they would tell these wonderful stories. And it just sounded so homespun. Then they would leave, and they'd walk off their own side of the stage into their own private dressing rooms. And then they had a mediator that would send notes back and forth. And I was the guy. They'd say, like, oh, can you go tell my brother? Yeah. Can you tell my brother this? It's like, guys, really?
Phil even said in an interview.
It was kind of silly.
Yeah, he said they didn't even record together.
Wow.
They'd be there at separate times recording. So I don't, you know.
I don't get it. But yet on stage, it looked like they were the best of friends.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a shame.
A great show. Mm-hmm. I saw them at a place you might know, may remember. It was called the Holiday Star Plaza.
Oh, I think I heard of that place. Yeah.
I can't find it.
No, I think they misplaced it.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I think so. So, but you won't, you know, the star is gone, obviously. But the Art Theater is there. And tonight we'll be celebrating Buddy's birthday with Kenny James and Ray Vaughan. Let's do another song. Kenny, this is another one you picked out that you said is one of your favorites. Crying, Waiting, Hoping. Is there a story behind this? When did he write and record this?
Oh, man, you're going to put me on the spot. He probably wrote it in 57. Wrote and recorded in early 57.
Okay.
You know, he did a lot of writing in a short period of time. It might have even been 56 when he
So this was earlier one.
Yeah, and but it might have been one that was released after, like a lot of them were.
Canned?
Yeah.
They were in a can?
They were released after he had passed. He had that album coming out.
Kind of like Prince and Hendrix. So they keep cranking stuff out, especially Hendrix. How many albums has he released, you know, since he died?
But like every day it's getting closer. That was released afterwards. Oh, a lot of his stuff is released afterwards. I guess it took that long to get a production or whatever.
Is this one you're going to do in the show?
Absolutely.
All right. This is Crying, Waiting, Hoping. And we've got a little time left. We'll be back on the other side, and we'll still get to the namesake song that the band took their name from.
Come back, I just can't seem to get you off my mind. I'm crying, waiting, hoping you'll come back. You're the one I love, and I think about you all the time. Crying, my tears keep falling all night long. Feels so useless, I know it's wrong to keep a crying, waiting, hoping you'll come back. Maybe someday soon things will change and you'll be mine.
We took it over, people. We're in charge now. Tom had to step out for a second, and we'll bring him back in. Here he comes. We're talking about Buddy Holly. We've got a great show tonight at the...
Where's it at?
You're back. You can tell. That's fine.
Art Theater.
The Art Theater in Hobart.
230 Main Street, two doors down from the Record Bin. And I just wanted to let people know that both the show tonight and tomorrow at the 8 Corner on sale online. But if you feel like perusing the record bins at the record bin, you can buy the tickets for tonight's show and save the service charge online.
Oh, so, very cool.
Now, you can come in there. We have physical tickets in there.
One more thing. I'm going to plug your record bin again because it am so impressed with it. Everybody that's into albums that want an album collection or want to add to their collection, you need to come here because you've got stuff that is just so cool.
Yeah, your dad even found one.
Yeah,
and he knows everything.
Yeah, he loves the old country stuff, and you got some of that in there, and you got some really cool obscure rock stuff that I see things up there. I'm like, oh man, I remember that. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
old Club Dimension posters signed by the Outlaws. Yeah. Stuff like that. That was some fun. Again, that's at 218 Main Street. You can catch the band tonight at 230 Main Street. And we got a couple minutes left. What have we not talked about that you would want to let people know about Buddy Holly? Stuff that maybe they don't know, something they might appreciate.
I don't know. I mean, you know, he was a young guy, and you see him when he was on Ed Sullivan, you know. You know, he sang Oh Boy on Ed Sullivan. And again, he was a very respectful guy, but when you tell him what to do, he gets mad.
Right? Did Ed try to tell him something?
Ed says, I love that song, but there's a part in there where you scream, will you please not scream? And what did Buddy Holly do?
Scream louder.
It's just before the solo, you know, ow, goes into the solo. He screamed through the whole song. The whole song was in full loud. Oh, my love. Oh, he was just proving his point. But when he was done, he walked over and said, thank you, sir, and shook his hand. He was a respectful guy.
Wow. Yeah. Of course, he told the Stones, you can't say sleep together, let's spend the night together. It alluded to something. The Doors. Yeah, there's so many things. And well, in honor of that moment of Buddy being respectfully, screw you. Let's play it.
One second, though. One thing that people don't know, he was on Ed Sullivan and he stood still. Buddy Holly did not stand still. He was a very wild guy on stage.
So just like Elvis, couldn't shake.
Yeah, and that's why they made him stand still, is because of all that stuff that was going on. You're shooting Elvis from the waist up because it was
all over. Well, you certainly move all over the stage. I tried shooting pictures of you at the last show. They're like blurry. Because you don't stand still very much. I got a couple here and there. But this is Buddy Holly, and oh boy, we'll be back a final time with the guys.
All of my love, all of my kissing, you don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy.
When you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The whole world can see that you were meant for me. All of my life, I've been waiting. No boy,
oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy,
oh boy,
the whole world can see that you were meant for me. Stars appear and the shadows are falling, and you can hear my heart calling. A little bit of loving makes everything right. I'm gonna see my baby tonight. All of my love, all of my kissing, you don't know what you've been missing, oh boy,
oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy,
oh boy,
the whole world can see that you were meant for me. You're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The whole world can see that you were meant for me. All of my life I've been waiting. Tonight there'll be no hesitating, oh boy.
Oh boy.
When you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The whole world can see that you were meant for me. Stars appear and the shadows are falling, and you can hear my heart calling. A little bit of loving makes everything right. I'm gonna see my baby tonight. All of my love, all of my kissing, you don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy.
When you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The whole world can see that you were meant for me.
Oh boy. And there was that scream in there.
Yeah.
That Ed didn't like.
Yeah.
But he got it anyway.
Yeah, and what I think I was telling you while this is playing, you can hear him clearing his throat in there a few different times because he had a cold while he was recording his song.
Wow. Wow. Now, you're going to be playing tonight at the Art Theater in Hobart. You'll be at the Acorn Theater in Three Oaks, Michigan tomorrow with your band Rave On. And that is a song I would expect you would do, Oh Boy.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. What's a song that you don't do that you are thinking of maybe adding in, or a song that you don't do that maybe you'd like to do that you haven't done
there's
yet?
There's quite a few. Mm-hmm. You know, we do True Love Ways, which is a song that was written with strings. Of course, he couldn't play it live like that because he didn't have an orchestra with him. But right. He was the first guy to do.
And they didn't have sampling then.
Right. And
he would have pioneered that too, I
yeah,
bet.
I'm sure. Oh, yeah. He was the first guy to record orchestra strings in a rock and roll setting.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And there's another song, Raining in My Heart.
Okay.
That it's one that we, unless I did it solo acoustically, it wouldn't transfer because there's so much orchestration in that song, which is, it's a great song. I'd love to do. There's quite a few of them. Quite Early in the Morning. You know, Modern Don Juan, mm-hmm. Fool's Paradise. I mean, there's a lot of them that we don't touch on. There's over 200 songs that he had done, and there's a catalog out. It's a box set. It looks like a high school yearbook, and all of his songs are in there.
Have you thought of doing a record of his stuff? Look, you know, there's all these different tribute records out.
I have.
It yourself.
Okay. I have done some.
Tell us about that.
Recorded them down in Pigeon Forge, and was. You can still get them. Just look me up on Facebook.
That's it. I see your Facebook page. Is there a website too?
No
website.
We just have a website, but you know, everybody's Facebook's been. It's so much easier. I guess I got lazy and careless, but I should probably get back on that.
Well, Facebook. Not everyone's on Facebook.
Well, that's true.
You know,
that's
everyone true. Can access websites, but not right. everyone can access Facebook
right.
because they're
You're
not
right.
all on there. There's a lot of pictures of you on here as well. I see you in a blue suit. I've seen you in a red suit. I've seen you in all kinds of stuff. What is the definitive Buddy Holly look?
Well,
do you always wear the bow tie?
Not always,
okay.
But most of the time, because that's what people remember from the Gary Busey movie. He wore the bow tie and stuff. And Buddy Holly was a slick character, man. He
mm-hmm.
wore suits and ties all the time. And bow ties were not as common as straight ties that he wore. You know, so I change it up. I mean, heck, last year I wore Charlie Hodges' sweater from 1950s.
That's right.
It was on his birthday that we did the show. So
that's right, at the Acorn.
Sweater.
I do remember, and mm-hmm. I have a picture of you wearing that.
Yeah.
Wow. So one of the things I do want to touch on, and that is the fact you've been doing Buddy. We only got a couple minutes left, but you've been doing Buddy a long time now. But we mentioned that you were touring with an Elvis tribute and doing all these other things. You had a country music career on your own for a while with your different bands. And there's that story that you had told me about Clark Kent and Superman in glasses.
Yeah.
Tell that real quickly for our listeners on how you came to be Buddy Holly.
Well, I was playing guitar for an Elvis, people know around here, Travis James. He was
mm-hmm.
a local around here. He's down in Pigeon Forge as well. I got him a job down there. You're welcome. And, and he'd call me and say, hey, so-and-so's got this show he's putting together and putting a band together and needs a guitar player. Give him a call. So I'd call him. And then I finally got to where I put a band together that knew all the Elvis stuff. And then if they call me and say, hey, I got a whole band, you know, we can do it that way. And we did a few like that. And I was doing a show with this guy in Chicago. I believe it was Joe Chirito.
Okay.
And he had a manager that came up to me and said, hey, here you go. He paid us. It was... you know, whatever, $50 a man or whatever it was in the band. He says, now next year or next month, we got that show at this other place. And I said, yeah, we'll be there. He says, well, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go find some Buddy Holly glasses and come out dressed as Buddy Holly. Because we would sing oldies and mm-hmm. Before the show and stuff. He goes, man, you sound like him. You can pull it off. I said, man, I don't want to be an impersonator. And back then, we were called impersonators.
Right. Yeah. Now it's a bad word to
That's
say
a bad
that.
Word
now you're
now.
A tribute
whatever.
Artist.
Whatever. Come on. You know, it's all
Then it became impressionist for a while.
Yeah, right. And I said, man, I don't want to do something like that and make it a mockery,
mm-hmm.
you know. And He said, well, okay. And he, like I said, he paid us, it was like $50 a man. He says, here's what Elvis made. And I showed me this check for a pretty good size amount.
Wow.
And I went out the next day trying to find glasses. You know? And yeah, so we did it. And I went, you know, I moved to Las Vegas and did some great shows out there, some really good stuff. I actually did a show at Liberace's house. They have a
before or after he died?
Oh, it's after.
Okay.
And they do a birthday celebration at his house, and people pay big bucks to be there. And I went. You walk through the house and greet people, and you know, in character, you're just walking around partying with people, not drinking, but mm-hmm. you know. And I walk through his living room. There's the furniture's there and everything, and there's this piano set, a beautiful pearl white grand piano or baby grand piano. And I just walked over and sat down and started playing chords on this piano. And then people started gathering around. I said, no, I don't play piano. I just want to be I can play some chords. Mm-hmm. I just want to be get up tomorrow and go tell people I sat in Liberace's living room and played his piano.
So they open this to the public for private parties?
Yeah.
That's kind of odd.
Yeah. It's
wouldn't see that happen at Graceland.
And it's a bigger house than it looks from the outside. And it's right down the street from the museum where the museum was, the Liberace mm-hmm. Museum. And it's a fundraiser, and it's people that – it's a committee that handles his affairs and do everything, and they do a good job, and they do these things to, at the time it was to support the museum,
and
all the proceeds went to that, and I don't know what they have a special cause now that they do it for, or even they still do it because it's been a while since I've been there.
Wow.
But so I did some great stuff down there, and then I go down to Pigeon Forge and do it there. But what's cool is when I take off the glasses and I walk around town, people don't know me.
Right.
You know, they're like,
you take off the bow tie, the glasses, the jacket, and you're just Kenny James.
Yeah, I'm just me. But then when I started doing the other character.
Uh-huh. Which he may be there.
He may be
there tomorrow.
He may be there. He may be there tonight. You never
know. You never know.
People knew me that way, and. They recognize me that way, but mm-hmm. and then the people that did recognize me as Buddy, they say, hey buddy, and I'm like, hey, how are you? You know,
everybody's Buddy.
Yeah, I mean, Buddy's just the hey buddy, hi, hey buddy. Yeah. But when they all started, I was walking around there, it was like, hey Barney, I'm like, my name's Kenny.
Yeah, you
know? Wow. Or I turn around, they say, hey Barney, I'd say, hey George. He goes, well, my name ain't George. I said, well, my name ain't Barney.
Wow. 7:30 tonight. Spaniels kick it off at the Art Theater in downtown Hobart. Tomorrow, special guest MC will join us along with Kenny James and Ray Vaughan. Spaniels will not be on the gig tomorrow.
Somebody's got to handle security.
So we're going to have fun no matter which show, or better yet, come to both shows. And maybe we'll mix things up a little bit.
This is what I'll do.
Okay.
If tonight you come tonight's show, if you bring your ticket stub from tonight's show to tomorrow night's show, bring it to me. I'll throw it away for you.
Where's that drum roll? All right. The name of the band is Ray Vaughan. My guest has been Kenny James and Danny Mundell. Drummer of Ray Vaughan is here, and we're going to say goodbye by playing the song of which you took your name. This is Buddy Holly. Ray Vaughan. See you tonight, 7:30, Art Theater with the Spaniels. Adios.
Somebody scream. Oh,
a little.